consider you a great friend. So,
yeah, the feeling is mutual, and it's always great to be with you, Kate.
Let's start right off the bat, kind of put you on the spot a little bit, because we've got the draft coming up, and it's, you know, there's more interest, I think, in this draft than I've seen in a long time now. The draft in Nashville, astounding. I think they had 500,000 people going to Nashville for the draft. Of course, there are other attractions there as well. But anyway, there's more and more interest in the draft, both from a television standpoint and even an event schedule. But having said that, I think the big issue that we hear most comments about, Vic, is the quarterback situation. And I think we're all pretty much resigned to the first two. And then the question goes to number three with San Francisco and what they do, and then what Atlanta does. Those are going to be key picks, and we'll go from there. But how do you see those picks going?
Yeah, well, first of all, I do agree with your whole idea that this is a high interest draft, and I think primarily because of the and where I go to next regarding how the top end unfolds, Kay, is the quarterback discussion, and I think every year that's what drives the interest level of any draft is, okay, how many of those premier position guys are gonna go, and how high do they go? And it's conceivable. I mean, I think we've seen it. We've seen variations of this, but I think there's been a definite thought that you could see the first five picks of this draft go quarterback, and that's remarkable to me to think that that's possible. But I absolutely can see it. I think that, you know, Trevor Lawrence, the obvious guy at the top to Jacksonville, you know, Zach Wilson to the Jets at number two. A lot of discussion, smoke screening, and so on and so forth regarding the 49ers, but I think ultimately they settle on Mac Jones in that three spot. And then you asked me about the Falcons at four, and that's where it gets intriguing because they too could go quarterback easily. But do they, you know, is that the spot where somebody trades up to get a quarterback there? Because my sense is that the Falcons are content to stick with Matt Ryan. I know there's been a lot of Kyle Pitts talk. My discussion, the tight end, of course, from Florida, my discussions with people in Atlanta, Kay, has been the Pitts references have been very heavily smokescreen type of stuff, and that the absolute need there is to go offensive tackle, offensive lineman, and Penei Sewell from Oregon is the more likely guy, again, unless somebody makes an overwhelming offer to Atlanta to say, okay, we want your pick because we got to get our quarterback.
Well, you know, I've heard something similar, too, that what Atlanta would ideally like to happen would be to move down, not far, move down four or five places, probably not more than that, in order to pick somebody like you're talking about. That would be ideal for them. Plus, they probably would have a chance if they make that change and somebody moving up, obviously, to get a quarterback, they're willing to pay more draft currency for it, that they may end up with not only the need that they want and the person that they want, but also with another player who could come in and help them. And I think that's, to me, I've said this on this program two or three times, to me that would be the play. They have a quarterback that they can still win with and win big with, I believe. I like Matt Ryan.
Yes.
And if he can play, yeah, I think he can play 3 to 4 more years, but if he can play 2 to 3 more years at top a top quality quarterback play in the National Football League, why wouldn't you surround him with all the needs that they have? Why wouldn't you surround him with the very best talent that you could possibly put around him and do a better job of coaching him? Defense has been atrocious. But put the best people you can around him and go play. And this is an ideal time where they can put additional people in the mix that they would ordinarily not have the rights to.
Absolutely. Look, I think the draft is all about first, and people lose sight of this. They when we get all carried away with this some a lot of times in the media, but grading the drafts and saying, okay, it's about, you know, how many picks you're able to accumulate, how many shrewdness did you use in getting the quality guy, et cetera. But it really comes down to staying true to what helps your team right now. You know, you can't, nobody can honestly say they can afford to make a choice either Thursday, Friday, or even Saturday, but certainly Thursday or Friday, and say, yeah, this guy's going to help us in a couple of years. You know, you may or may not be around to coach or manage a team like that in a couple of years. Those are the realities, the harsh realities of the league. I think it's urgent, always urgency for everybody. Who helps you now? So in the case of the Falcons, I think you got to address a position that does give you that help. Like you say, Matt Ryan, you could win with him, but you can win better with him if you protect him. And then two, you can help yourself as a team if you're able to get what you need, but also add other players, another player that enhances your chances of winning immediately.
Well, certainly, that's true. I agree with you 100%. Yeah, let's move back to what happens now. Let's say that the ideal scenario happens for Atlanta. So we got three quarterbacks gone. Somebody's moved up. They would be moving up to take a quarterback. Who do you think might be the next quarterback to go?
Well, I'm looking at a couple of people here. I mean, I think again, the as far as I'm concerned, at least the first two spots seem very fairly set. With Trevor Lawrence from Clemson at Jacksonville and then Zach Wilson to the Jets. The discussion starts with the 49ers and what they're going to do. Does Mac Jones from Alabama make sense? Does Justin Fields from Ohio State make sense? And I've seen the cases made for both guys there. I'm leaning toward Jones, even though, again, there's probably a little, you know, less in the way of true and looking at the history with Alabama quarterbacks is trying to find somebody that gives you that prospect of being ready to contribute because of the skill he has and what he can bring to your offense versus what's around him, and that's always a challenge when you deal with such an incredible program like Alabama's. And all the talent there. And then beyond that, I think it's some variation of the four names I just mentioned in Lawrence, Wilson, Jones, Fields, who end up there. But then there's the whole Trey Lance idea. And where does he come into this? Because I think he's fascinating. North Dakota State, I don't worry about the level of competition as much as maybe other people do. Because we've seen any number of players come from whatever that mid-level of competition is at the collegiate level and have great careers. You know, go down the list, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, the long and established Super Bowl-winning careers. Go all the way back to Phil Simms, right? You know, so you can find guys who will be excellent players. Josh Allen for Buffalo. coming out of Wyoming. I mean, you can find those guys. So it's not about the competition. It's about, does the guy give you that ability? You know, is that guy the kind of player that you know can on his abilities succeed? So I like Lance. I know there's less known about him than some of the others, but he's certainly gaining some traction. So that's the five. I don't think he goes any lower to answer your question about like where it unfolds. I think all five of these guys probably end up in the top 10. And I think the cutoff point, the interesting point, is New England, because I see New England, if they stay where they are, going quarterback there, unless, of course, they try to trade for a Jimmy Garoppolo. And they still might draft a quarterback, even if they do that.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, what New England does, for sure. I think there are a couple of quarterbacks. In my humble opinion, I may be totally wrong, but there's a lot of smoke about New England moving up. I think that's smoke. They usually don't do that. Usually don't draft a quarterback in the first round. He likes to move back, and they are ones that certainly Belichick is the one that sticks by that value determination that they have on each and every player. There's some great value. Even if they stayed where they were, took best available player there, and then into the second round, maybe moved up into late first or early second round and took a guy like Kyle Trask or Davis Mills from Stanford, both would fit the profile of the quarterback that they had there for 20 years and won pretty big with it. Both drop back passes, make the defense defend the whole field, 53.5 yards wide, 60 yards deep.
Yes.
Good arms, smart kids, both of them, extremely bright, can pick up all the way New England changes the game plan from week to
yes.
week. You better be pretty sharp there. They check a lot of the boxes.
They do, Kay, and Mills is an intriguing guy, of course, from Stanford. Like you said, you talk about how bright he is, how in command he looks to be, even if he doesn't necessarily share the overwhelming raw talent as others. And I think he's more than talented enough to be a guy that you'd give that first round grade. What I think could be interesting with him. And you're right. I mean, it could be just a matter of New England just staying right where they are and doing it there. I wouldn't even be shocked if they traded down to gain more picks, which is their way. They like to do that, enhance the overall ability of either current or future drafts having those picks available. But I'd say you can go down with a Mills. And I don't know if these days still exist where that bottom, that lower portion of the first round, K, right, was usually where you'd get that. You'd make that move on a quarterback who you know you don't have to play right away, unlikely, and you want to get him on your team, but certainly get him in the process. Maybe he plays as a rookie, but, that lower portion of the first or even into the second, and I feel like Mills falls into that category.
Yeah, both those kids would be high-value picks. The value that they put on players is based on where you can get them. Now, if they were drafted high in the first round, the value is not going to be very high because they're not from they're not graded at that level. But if they were late first or early second or in the second round, both would be high-value picks there. So that's the way Belichick likes to go, and he likes to move down.
Appreciate that. Let me ask you a question here. I really feel like New England did very unusual what they did in free agency. I really think Belichick is a bright guy. I don't think this is all by coincidence or happenstance. I think he looked ahead and felt that when they started –
last year, calling off the off season and putting limitations on this and on that, and no people in the stands. I think he projected ahead to a lowering of the salary cap, and with that, more players, people that could play, would be on the street and available during free agency, because with a lowering of the cap, a lot of teams could not afford to keep them. And you say, well, you'd have to be a soothsayer to see all that. Well, I don't think so. I think he planned. They held back on anything they could do to hold back as much money as they could in the cap, and then they went out in free agency, which was totally unusual for them to do, and they had a heck of a signing year with the in the free agency. I think they filled a lot of holes, and they have some people who opted out coming back, like Hightower and a couple of others. They're going to be a much better football team if they can get a quarterback. I think they need a quarterback, and it doesn't have to be a vet. I think the way they handle the quarterback and surrounding with everything that they could possibly want, and even to the extent that they limit what they would ask him to do, just like they did Brady when he was a rookie, when he took over. I think New England's going to be drastically improved in that division. So here we go again. A lot of people are saying, yeah, Buffalo is the team to beat there. Bring me up to date. What are your feelings, and what do you hear, certainly being right there in Buffalo? What's the thought process?
Yeah, well, Kay, first of all, your thoughts on the Patriots, I think, are correct for the most part. I mean, it isn't about soothsaying. It's about logical thinking. And I think Bill Belichick, you know, went that way. And first of all, as a coach or as the leader of an organization, you have to have the luxury to be able to think that way. You know, that's an important part of this discussion is, you know, can you afford to essentially understand that the 2020 season, and you've got to explain this to your ownership, that, you know, we're probably going to be, we're going to have a rough time with this particular team. And then, you know, but in 2021, as we build up through free agency and deal with the way the cap goes, and by the way, the expectation that the cap is going to jump skyrocket, as a lot of optimistic people think, with the new television deal in 2022 and beyond, I think it'll really climb. I've heard differing thoughts on that, but it might not jump as high as some people may think. So there's that to look at as well. But I think he was shrewd in how he built it there. But the conversation about how far they go also has to include what's their quarterback situation like. You know, they obviously retain Cam Newton, but is he going to be the answer? Is he going to be able to carry them through the way they need him to? And is he with enough, you know, full year in that offense and working with Josh McDaniels and so forth, can it all, you know, come together in ways that it did not last year? They also took some hit on their offensive line. So are they going to have the protection that he's got to have? Are they going to have a running game that's going to be formidable enough to complement what he does? A lot of those questions remain. I do think they can be a formidable challenger. I don't think they're going to be the 7-9 sort of weakling of the division that they were last year. How much better is the question? I say Buffalo is still the team to beat. I think they're still loaded with the most talent. And I think they made some good moves in this offseason. Emmanuel Sanders, the receiver they picked up to replace John Brown, I think it's going to be probably an upgrade for a good player. So their receiving game with Stephon Diggs, with Cole Beasley, Sanders, Gabe Davis in his second year, and, of course, Josh Allen, on the assumption that the ascension continues with him, and they're going to probably do a long-term deal with him before, I think, the season begins. So all of that should result in Buffalo being
more than solid and easily the team that you put on top. But, you know, keep an eye on Miami. How good do they become? And don't sleep on the New York Jets. I think that one of the biggest changes they made, I mean, that was, you know, we're going to talk about how they changed their quarterback out with sending Sam Darnold to Carolina, but it's their head coach. I think they upgraded a ton by going, from Adam Gase to Robert Saleh, because I think Robert is a sound leader. He's a defensive-rooted guy, but I think he brings, and we'll see. It's always a new experience when a guy goes from running one side of the ball to having to run the whole team. But I'm hearing good things about the respect he commands and the agenda he has set that is far different than what was there. So we'll see if that all comes to fruition. But I think it'll be a more competitive AFC East for sure. But I'm with you. I think New England made a lot of moves that could improve them overall. But the big thing I need to see is, are they going to be a much better team at that quarterback position? Because, you know, right now, you know, Buffalo has, I think, the best guy by a lot. And we'll see what the rest is.
Well, I agree with your assessment. Oh, well, better be careful with Miami. Listen, Miami's putting a lot of talent on the field, and I think Tua's going to be an outstanding quarterback.
Yeah,
we do. Certainly, the more he gets accustomed to it, Jets are going to be better. New England's going to be better. The whole division, I think, it's going to be a much, much improved division in the National Football League. My observation, just you're talking about the quarterbacks, and I think Cam Newton is just a placeholder right now as a quarterback. Certainly, Belichick knows that they've got to upgrade that. I think he has an idea of what he wants. I think the ideal quarterback for him is Jones from Alabama, but I don't think he's going to get Jones. I think you're right. I think San Francisco will make that choice. If they don't, look out. He may do some crazy things to get Jones. I think Jones fits perfectly. But at any rate, the thing with Buffalo, and I really, really have a lot of admiration for what they did with Allen last year. I think he improved. Gosh, his rookie and sophomore years were, in many ways, just awful. He was totally inaccurate, couldn't hit the broadside of the barn, running around loosey-goosey. I don't know, just my observation for watching. But he really made a lot of progress last year. He looked more like an NFL quarterback. He hung in there. He threw the ball. He had a heck of a lot more accuracy than before. The only problem that I had when he missed in the playoff game, Vic, where he reverted back to some things that you saw early on in his career. And I hope for Buffalo's sake and for his sake, because he seems like a really good kid, I hope that it was just a one-game misfire, and that doesn't happen again for him. But overall, that is going to be a very, very difficult division to play in. What do you see Buffalo doing in the draft? Certainly, they've got to have some idea. They're in a pretty good situation overall. I know they don't have all the choices that other people do, but where do you think they're going to look to move in the draft, if anywhere?
You talk about Buffalo. With the 30th pick, I mean, the challenge is that you could struggle with identifying true first round value. I'd say on average, and I know you spoke, I think, yesterday with Bill Polian, and you know, a conversation I had with Bill, the Hall of Fame general manager, was that he said about 18 players thereabouts, 20, maybe 18, maybe 20 on the most generous side, would have true first-round grades. So we've got 32 first-round slots. That means there are definite players who are going to get drafted in the first round on that formula who won't be first-round grades. And you might be pulling them up from the second round or even the third round, but paying them the first-round slotting. So there's the – and I think that becomes a bigger issue, a bigger challenge at 30, because you're now at a point where if you don't move from there, you've seen, the potential for all of your first-round graded players. And I don't know how many Buffalo has graded in its board that can be called first rounders, but I think it's not crazy to think that they could all be cleaned out by the time Buffalo picks, or they could be down to, maybe one or two. And look, their roster's set, so they're not drafting to fill a starting spot. I don't think they're necessarily drafting to get a major contributor, but I think they got to get a contributor. You got to get somebody that helps you somewhere. Maybe he's a rotational player or a depth player, whatever. But I like the needs they have. Edge rusher is big. I think cornerback is important. I think you can make a case for you can make a case for a tight end. It is also important. Defensive tackle. There's been a lot of hue and cry that people want to see them go for Travis Etienne, the Clemson back, home run hitter, a guy who's been compared favorably to Alvin Kamara and so forth. And yeah, that'd be a nice luxury to get at 30. But I'm still wary about investing in a first round pick in a back because I think you can get a back lower than that and for less commitment of cost. And two, in that offense, because one of the big selling points of EDN is the receiving ability he has. Well, they throw that football a lot, the Bills do, and who catches it. It's Stephon Diggs, led the league in receptions and yards. Cole Beasley was right there with a lot of catches and yards and a lot of yards after catch. Gabe Davis, who was a rookie, now going into his second year. And now you just brought in Emmanuel Sanders. So I look at it and say, okay, that's four guys that I feel like I want to have the ball to make plays. And, yeah, I want to have a dimension with my backfield. But is the offense that was, that set records for scoring yards, all the records Josh Allen had in career on a team that had Jim Kelly as its quarterback and then Drew Bledsoe had that incredible year when he was in Buffalo. Is he that transformative and that player, and is it necessary, or are you helping yourself more in your chase of the Chiefs, who are the gold standard in the AFC, to help your defense, to get an edge rusher as a rookie can play and get to the quarterback and help your other edge rushers?
Well, I agree with you totally. But it's a good situation that they're in, no doubt about it. Vic, we're gonna let you go. I apologize for keeping you on so long. I'd like to have you on sometime after the draft so we can evaluate total talent procurement, meaning free agency and the draft, and take a look at it from there. But anyway, thanks a million, buddy. Great to have you on.
My pleasure, Kay. Be well, my friend. We'll talk to you.